Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. This is Cale Clark. Welcome back to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio mobile app. It's our Exodus series, and today we are going to cross the Red Sea with the Israelites. One of the high points of this Exodus journey, the first part of the book, The Power of God. This is maybe the ultimate, getting them through the Red Sea and the drowning of the Egyptian army. Let's read it together. Why don't you pick up your Bible with me, and we'll turn to Exodus chapter 14. We'll just read the first little part here, and then we'll chat about it a little bit. Exodus 14, verse 1 and following. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Tell the sons of Israel to turn back and encamp in front of Pi-hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, in front of Baal Zephon. You shall encamp over against it by the sea. For Pharaoh will say of the sons of Israel, 'They are entangled in the land. The wilderness has shut them in.' And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them, and I will get glory over Pharaoh and all his host, and the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord." And they did so. Okay, let's stop here for just a moment. This is the preamble, if you will, to what's going to happen in just a little bit. And so the Lord is talking to Moses here, and what he's saying, really, it almost sounds like he's leading them on a suicide mission. He's leading them into a trap. He basically wants them to do a button hook pattern. If you've ever watched football, you know what a button hook is. The receiver just runs down the field, stops, does a quick turnaround, comes back to the quarterback. He's actually asking them to do this. Yahweh is saying, "I want you to run a button hook pattern, turn back, turn around, and encamp in front of Pi-hahiroth between Migdol and the sea." Now, Migdol is a place name which means tower. It's an awful lot like Magdala, which means fish tower, in the New Testament, in front of Baal Zephon. And of course, Baal Zephon is the name of the pagan Canaanite deity. And essentially what's going to happen here is they're going to trap themselves. They're going to be entrapped. But God is not leading them to a place that they will be harmed. Far from it. In fact, he wants to really do this incredible miracle. And it is going to be a chance for the Israelites to grow in their faith and finally, hopefully, trust in Yahweh and trust in his servant Moses. He's going to make them, force them to work out, if you will, to exercise their faith. It's a little bit like the prophet Jeremiah, in Jeremiah 29, verse 11. It's a very famous verse in the Old Testament. "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future." And just for fun, we'll read the next couple of verses as well. Jeremiah 29:12. 29:11 is quoted a lot. But what about 12 and 13? "Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all of your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and I will bring you back from captivity." Now what captivity is he talking about there? Well, this is the Babylonian captivity. But, of course, the Israelites had just escaped from Egypt and the captivity there. And so really what's going on here is God is not leading them into a trap, but he's going to help them and really force them to exercise their faith. Our faith is like a muscle. It needs to be worked out or else it becomes atrophied. It becomes really flabby. You know what happens when you don't work out and you just become a couch potato doing 12-ounce curls on the couch as you watch football? Not that I've ever done that. Not that I've ever done that. But you've got to use it or lose it when it comes to your faith muscle. It's a little bit like driving a car. Cars need to be driven. I learned that the hard way one summer. We had two vehicles. One of them was a little bit older and didn't really need it in the summertime, and so I kind of left it sitting in the driveway. And what I found out, I should have known this, is that if you don't drive a car, then it's going to rust out. And the brake lines all rust out. It was a little humid. It was a little wet. It got all rusty. When I tried to use it again in the fall, it needed some major, major repair work. And that's what the mechanic told me. Cars are made to be driven. You got to drive them to keep them in top shape. And it's the same thing with our faith. We have to drive that muscle. We have to use it, or we might lose it. You're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. Okay, now let's keep reading here in Exodus chapter 14. It says in verse 5, when the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, the mind of Pharaoh and his servants was changed toward the people. And they said, what is this we have done, that we have let Israel go from serving us? So he made ready his chariot and took his army with him, and took 600 picked chariots and all the other chariots of Egypt, with officers over all of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the sons of Israel as they went forth defiantly. The Egyptians pursued them, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them and camped at the sea by Pi-hahiroth in front of Baal Zephon. All right, let's stop here also for just a moment. Pharaoh and his leadership team around him suddenly realizes, uh-oh, what have we done? We have just made a tremendous blunder here. It's exactly reminiscent, by the way, of the very beginning of the book. In Exodus chapter 1, we read this in verse 8. It says, now there arose a new king over Egypt. And this is the Pharaoh that we're talking about here. Now there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. And he said to his people, behold, the sons of Israel are too many and too mighty for us. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply. And if war befall us, they join our enemies and fight against us and escape from the land. Therefore, they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with heavy burdens. And they built for Pharaoh store cities, Pithom and Ramses. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied, and the more they spread abroad. And the Egyptians were in dread of the sons of Israel. So they made the sons of Israel serve with rigor and made their lives bitter with hard service in mortar and brick and in all kinds of work in the field. In all their work, they made them serve with rigor. So this is the initial account of how they were enslaved. But that verse where Pharaoh says, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply. And if war befall us, they join our enemies and fight against us and escape from the land. That fear that they would escape from the land, well, that's actually happening now. And it almost snaps Pharaoh out of it. What have I done? And he forgets for a moment all the plagues, the death of the firstborn, the death of his own firstborn. He says, we've got to go after them and get them back. But this is all God's doing. God is hardening his heart, and he's leading him into the final trap. But Pharaoh, you have to understand that Egypt was the dominant world power at that time. They were a superpower in their day. Josephus, the great Jewish historian, talks about this account and what happened and the size of the fighting force that the Egyptians sent out to try to recapture the Israelites. Besides the 600 chariots, Josephus says there were 49,000 horsemen and 200,000 foot soldiers. I mean, this is a massive army here we're talking about. Now, the chariots usually were manned by two men, two warriors. One of them was, as one commentator says, almost like a modern-day jockey. If you watch the Kentucky Derby, usually smaller guys are riding the horses. They can kind of manipulate them. And so that's what the chariot driver would have been like, very lithe, very sinewy, maybe not so big. And there would have been another warrior with him in the chariot car who also, you know, wasn't necessarily like the Incredible Hulk, but a little bit stronger and yet able to sort of attack people from the chariot, maybe swing an axe or a sword or something like that as they're passing by. So this is a major, major league power. Militarily, they seemed invincible. And so it seems as if the Israelites are really trapped here. Let's read on here. Let's go back to the text. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 14. This is Cale Clark. You're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio, the Exodus series. All right, let's look at verse 10 of Exodus 14 and following. When Pharaoh drew near the sons of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they were in great fear. And the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord, and they said to Moses, "Is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done? What have you done to us in bringing us out of Egypt? Is not this what we said to you in Egypt? Let us alone and let us serve the Egyptians, for it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness." And Moses said to the people, "Fear not, stand firm, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you, and you have only to be still." The Lord said to Moses, "Why do you cry to me? Tell the sons of Israel to go forward. Lift up your rod and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, that the sons of Israel may go on dry ground through the sea. And I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they shall go in after them. And I will get glory over Pharaoh and all his host, his chariots and his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I have gotten glory over Pharaoh, his chariots and his horsemen." All right, let's stop there for just a second here. One of the things that we need to realize, you probably heard the old saying, adversity reveals character. You know, when we go through tough times, it kind of tends to reveal what our true character is. Adversity also reveals our faith, the state of our faith, our spiritual status. And that's what's happening with the Israelites right now. And they're saying things like, "Well, is it because there are no graves in Egypt?" They're being very sarcastic towards Moses. "Is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you've taken us away to die in the wilderness?" I mean, we could have just died there. My goodness, what is happening here? So they're really betraying their lack of faith at this point. So adversity reveals faith or lack thereof. Being a follower of God, even in the New Covenant time, being a follower of the Lord Jesus is extremely difficult at the best of times. Jesus says we have to pick up our cross and carry it every day. "Hey, if they persecuted me," Jesus said, "they're going to persecute you too." Following Christ is always going to be difficult at some level, but it's not nearly as difficult as following the enemy, following Satan. And really, Pharaoh is a type of Satan. He's an archetype of Satan. If you're not following Jesus Christ, you are in bondage to the evil one. You say, "Wait a minute, Cale. Wait a minute. I'm not a Satan worshiper. I'm a good person. I'm a good person." Well, that's. I'm not saying you are, but if a person, as long as a person is not actively following Jesus, the devil's got you exactly where he wants you to be. You don't need to be actively following the devil, intentionally follow. As long as you're not following Christ, he's got you right where he wants you. If you're a Cino, C-I-N-O, Catholic in name only, I spent many years like that myself, the enemy has you where he wants you. It's almost like he's hung that sign upon your door, just like in a hotel room, "Do not disturb." He's not necessarily looking to make your life a living hell on earth, the evil one. He'll leave you undisturbed. He may even be fine with you prospering in life and being healthy and seemingly having fun. Because as long as you are not following the Lord and becoming a disciple of Jesus, well, that would be the terrible end game for him. That's not what he wants. So he's fine to just leave you on your own as long as you're spiritually asleep. So this is something we always have to understand. And so the Israelites need to grow in their faith here. And one of the things that Moses says to them, and this is just a great speech by Moses in this chapter. In verse 13, Moses says to the people, "Fear not. Stand firm and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again. The Lord will fight for you, and you have only to be still." You have only to be still. Just be still. Let God fight for you. That's a very, very comforting verse. It reminds me a lot of another famous verse in the Old Testament, Psalm 46, verse 10. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. So be still and know that I am God. That's exactly what Moses is exhorting them to do. And God will be exalted among the nations, among the Egyptians, because he's going to show his power once again. And this is the great spiritual battle, is allowing God to fight for you. And this is a great lesson that we have to learn as well. You know, there are a lot of times in our lives when we run up against intractable problems, seemingly intractable problems, we can't solve them with human ingenuity alone. We've gone to the limits of our intelligence. We've tried to figure it out, and we should do that. God has given us a mind. God has given us counselors. There are wise people, spiritual directors, friends, people we can ask for help. But sometimes we run up against a wall. We've done all that stuff. We've used the mind he has given us, but we are out of resources. Or sometimes we're out of physical resources. We're in a jam. We have our finances are running dry. Our bills need to be paid. We run up against these problems where we have gone to the very end of our resources. Just like the Israelites were trapped and the Egyptian army is closing in on them, the greatest fighting force in the world. They were in a jam and only God could get them out. And sometimes that happens to us as well. We are in a jam, and only God can help us at that point. And a lot of people, they only turn to prayer at that point when they're in a jam. We have to pray at all times, as St. Paul says. But when we get to that point, we're in those tough spots, that's the time when we really need to get excited, because God will act on our behalf. If we are still, we pray, we trust in him, we need to learn to see things with our inner eye of faith. Walk by faith, not by sight. We have to understand that God is going to do something for us here. All right, so what's going on here? Thomas Dozeman says that really there's a three-way conversation happening between God, the Israelites, and Moses. What we see here in verse 10, when the sons of Israel cry out, they're in great fear. Is it because there are no graves in Egypt? You've taken us away to die in the wilderness. They see the advancing Egyptian army. So they cry out to Yahweh. They cry out to the Lord. It says the sons of Israel cry out to the Lord. And then they complain to Moses. So they cry to Yahweh, complain to Moses. Then Moses' response, and again, this is just great, when he says, "Fear not, stand firm, see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. The Egyptians you see today, you'll never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You only have to be still." And then verse 15 seems kind of odd. It almost seems like God is rebuking Moses. The Lord said to Moses, "Why do you cry to me? Tell the sons of Israel to go forward." So actually what's happening there is that Yahweh is not talking to Moses. He's not saying, "Why do you cry to me? What are you doing?" He's actually speaking through Moses to the Israelites. They're the ones that are crying. They're the ones saying, "I'm terrified." They're the ones who are saying, "We're going to die." So basically what's going on is the Lord is saying to Moses, "Tell the Israelites, why do you cry to me? Tell the sons of Israel to go forward. You've got to advance. You've got to advance." And what's happening there is that They are afraid to take on freedom. We've talked about this before. They're afraid to take on the freedom that they're going to have in the wilderness. They're afraid to go forward on the journey. And so three things are happening here. E.W. Conrad, another scholar, he said, basically what's being said here, three things. Number one, do not be afraid. Don't be afraid. It's always a theme in the Bible. Number two, stand firm, and you will see the salvation of Yahweh. So don't be afraid. Stand firm. Number three, keep still. Keep still, be still and know that I'm God. God will fight for you. And right now, the Israelites are preferring, once again, the slavery they had in Egypt to the risk of freedom in the wilderness. They can't do that. They've got to move. They've got to take action. They've got to take that step of faith. So this murmuring that they're doing right now, and this is going to be the beginning of a great tradition, a tradition unlike any other, where they start murmuring against Moses' people. They start complaining. This is going to have to be weeded out of them. And so God always speaks to the people through Moses here in the book of Exodus. Only one time God spoke directly to them when he gave them the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai. And they were so frightened by the voice of God, they said, please don't ever speak to us again. Only go through Moses. We don't want to hear this. We only want to hear it through Moses, the mediator, lest we die. All right, so we've come to this dramatic part in the narrative. Speaking of part, God is going to part the Red Sea through Moses, provide a way of escape. And we'll deal with that when we pick up the book of Exodus again. I'm Cale Clark for The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. Please tell a friend about the show, about the podcast, and we'll catch you in the next episode. God bless you.